Welcome to Voice Rising with Kara Johnstad. Enjoy weekly conversations with leading luminaries, pioneering visionaries, singers, poets, musicians, and sound healers as we explore the profound role our voice plays on the path to self-realization and global enlightenment. The internationally acclaimed singer, composer, author, healer, recording artist, voice expert, creator of Voice Your Essence, and founder of the School of Voice, Kara Johnstad, uses her extraordinary spiritual gifts to empower others. Everything in this world vibrates. Everything has a frequency. A pioneer in the field of voice work and transformational songwriting. Her breakthrough methods are helping thousands of people worldwide fine-tune their body-mind-spirit system and unlock the energetic frequencies of limitless creativity, health, and abundance. Share your voice, ask your questions, join in the conversation. Receive life-changing, positive transformation and rise together to create a sound world. And here's your host, Kara Johnstad.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to our show today. It seems like our lives are busier than ever, and we are being bombarded with constant messaging going on from social media, chat groups, movie trailers, and marketing. And the question we're going to ask today is, how do we learn to tune in to what we truly desire? And with me in studio is Emma Lucy Knowles. Emma is an intuitive hands-on healer, clairvoyant, and a meditation teacher. She has worked with crystals and energy for over 15 years, helping people and souls from all over the world heal their pain, find joy, and achieve success. She's also the go-to crystal expert in lots of lifestyle magazines and has been featured in Cosmopolitan, Grazia, Harper's Bazaar, Women's Health, and Elle. So I warmly welcome you, Emma, to Voice Rising.
Oh, hello. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, it's good to have you. Emma, you have a new book that is being released. I think you're right in those release days, giving birth to a book called The Life-Changing Power of Intuition, and it's a guide to finding and following your inner voice. So share with us a little bit about why it's so important to become friends with our intuition.
I think when we start making friends with our intuition, we make better friends with ourselves. I think we definitely, what I've learned in the UK over kind of nearly 20 years now, is that we very effortlessly fall into that sort of condescending, hard, heavy voice, that egoic voice. We trust it with everything. And leaning into our intuition just helps us. It's not just about making magic. Obviously, the manifestation part helps, but it's about giving ourselves a better quality of life, having better mental health, having a better way of looking at the current situations that we find ourselves in, and allowing us then to work towards creating a better future. It gives us a sense of empowerment, I think, as well. It allows us to sort of say, I have more control and more power in my life than I was brought up knowing. So I think it's really,
that's good.
Really important.
Yeah. You mentioned a little bit the heavy kind of ego voice. How can we tell when we're getting in touch with our own voice and we sense a very strong opinion and we're really being guided in a way that is, you know, maybe not decor with what's going on around us? How can we tell? Is it ego or is it intuition?
Yeah. The thing is that voice in your head, it uses the same tone. So it speaks like we're speaking now. So we trust it when we hear it. So yeah, it's the language that it uses that's very, very systematically different. So intuition tends to be lighter, brighter, more, dare I say the word, positive, tends to be more inspiring, tends to be more encourageable, whereas ego tends to be those safe words such as you couldn't, you can't, how could you possibly? And I think what I wanted to do with the book was, everybody's got that voice, but also we've got this amazing body that voice lives within. So if we teach people how that voice sounds, how can we also tell them how that voice feels? So how can we give you what I call tell, so that when you're listening into that voice, you build this guidance system with your body, so that when your body says that sounds good, you can trust more into that voice. We don't trust that positive, light, sunny voice. we think that's too good to be true. But if that feeling resonates then within the body, we know that it's not just sort of blind hope, or it's not us just wanting something because it's on our bucket list. It's because it actually sits within that intuitive space and says, this is what's right for you. And it's the voice, but it's how the voice carries in the body as well. So I think what I wanted to do with the book was teach people how to feel good in your body by listening to that voice and working with your body to overcome that little chatty voice that says you can't. So when it says you can't, that when you feel in, you feel that voice saying, everything else in my body, like my belly goes still for me when I'm feeling this, that's yes, that's what I need. I know how to listen to that because I've taken the time to work that muscle.
Exactly. Yeah, you're known as the kind of the crystal guru out there. So you work a lot with resonance. You work a lot with the energy of stones. Yep. You're also doing a lot of hands-on healing. What drew you to work on intuition as your next book? I mean, you could have also been working on the power of sapphire energy, or you could be working on a lot of things. So where's the connection between your work as somebody who works a lot with the resonance of and the energy frequencies of stones and bringing that resonance into our body?
That's a good question. I feel when people go to see us as healers, there's this sort of level of expectation of, I need you to fix me. And for me, the work is all about, I need to work with you, show you how to kind of work and heal yourself.
Yeah.
And I've always like looked at crystals like friends. And the psychic work, the intuitive work for me has always come. It found me at a very young age, but it was quite scary, daunting. It felt quite a pressure. And crystals came and gave me this wonderful space where I could listen into my body and understand how I felt. Otherwise, I was in a room full of people and I'd feel all sorts of pain and think it was mine when actually it was just kind of vibrating at other people's frequency. Here in the UK, for definite, I think having something tangible that you can put in front of somebody and say, this is a crystal, it vibrates. It helps us arch the conversation to the bigger picture of what it's vibrating towards, because it gives someone something to look at, they can feel it, they can trust it. And it helps them with that sense of trusting your voice, because if you can trust into what you feel and you can learn how to start arcing into listening to intuition through Mother Nature, you then start to do it through yourself. So for me, it was the book I always wanted to write. I actually turned down my first book, which was kind of crazy, because crystals were my guilty secret for a very long time. And I used to have them out on my desk, and everyone was like, oh, what's that? And, you know, weird woo-woo, like how many times have we all been thrown that word at? But for me, I was like, they brought me comfort, and I was proud of them in my space. When the publisher came and said, do you want to write this book? I said, no, no, thank you. And then 6 months later, they came back and said, the writer's pulled out, do you want to do it? And I said, I listened in, I felt in my belly, and she said to me, we've got a month to do it. And I said, let's do it. So I wrote it in 2 weekends, and now it's in 10 different languages. So I think if I was to start with the intuition book, it wouldn't have helped people bridge that gap into the kind of the conversation. If it's, you know, crystals have been an amazing changing agent in my life, and I know when people leave session, they might not feel that they can just always tap into me, and I wouldn't want them to do that. But if they've got the crystals and we're starting to work with how they work, then they're going to be more inclined to start doing that in their own time, in their own space. And it gives them that thing to feel like, I've got that there and I'm working with it. And it does do that, but it gives people confidence. They give people confidence. And the next step is how to really trust yourself, I think, and trust that voice. And it's a bit that, you know, I know that I really struggled with. Well, I'm 38 now, and I was always told, you're wrong, you're not hearing that. No, that's not what I was sensing. And I was right a million times over, but, you know, I had to make peace with the fact that you don't need to be right. As long as you know it in yourself, that's all that matters.
Yeah, what is your most vivid memory where you felt that your intuition was leading you in one direction, but you decided not to follow it, and you hit against a wall?
So this would happen in that old thing we call love. I haven't had many boyfriends, but I had my last boyfriend. Everyone was like, oh, yeah, you haven't been out with anyone for years. You know, go for it, go for it. And my gut was like, no, like this just doesn't feel right. He gives me this, I don't want to use the word ick, he's not a disgusting person, but you know, that feeling in your body.
Yeah.
And I went for it and I did it. And sure enough, that it came to prove what 3 years later. But actually, I'm kind of pleased that I went against the voice, because if you don't go against it, if you don't get it a little bit wrong, how are you ever to know what the yes feels like? If you go through your life, just succeed, you never know how then when that feeling in your body comes and says this is wrong for you or this is better, you never know what that feels like, because it's constantly living on this kind of high space without any grounding. So the knockbacks I've had, the times I've gone against it, the times people have said no, or you know, I cherish every one of those, because I'm like a psychic skeptic, because I now just push myself that little bit harder to go tune in a little bit deeper and really, really know that for yourself. So I've never done anything like, you know, you have those moments where you go with your gut and you have to, but for other decisions now I'll sit and I'll sense it. And now we're teaching people to do the same.
You talked a little bit about your writing process. I wanted to ask you, but because we're talking about the inner voice, but writing is also tapping into that inner voice and bringing it out into the world to share it with a bigger listening audience, or just, you know, yeah. So what is your writing process like? I mean, two weekends is incredible, right? I was hoping you were going to say you struggle, but it seemed like if you could do that book in 2 weekends, that you were very tapped in, tuned in to your inner voice. Does it come easily for you to write?
It depends what I think what you're writing about. I think it's about catching the flow. At that time when I was writing that, I was working for a CEO, so I was a business assistant, and I wasn't getting much kind of I'd work, never any praise, always in places where I was kind of squished and squashed. And when I sat down at that computer to do that, I just felt like I was sort of sitting in a porthole and it was kind of flowing through me. Yeah. And I was always told at school, you can't write because you're spelling bad, therefore you're awful at English. So I never thought I'd write. So when I found this flow, I felt like, wow, this is something. This is fun. And did it without expectation. So I know a lot of my friends, I have some friends who write maybe fiction or things like that, and they sit and they plan. And for me, that kind of ruins it for me. Like, I have a basic plan, but I think you got to go with the flow and be okay to kind of get it wrong. If I send it to my publisher, it's like, this will do it better there, this is better there. Not to get offended by that, to be like, okay, yeah, let me read it like that and let's see how it goes. And I think it's a bit like, you know, when they sort of that feeling of beginner's luck, where you're like, I'm onto something here. And I did actually start writing a second book. We started doing something about, gosh, it was like signs and stones. And I was writing it, I was like, oh, just not feeling this. Don't want to do it. I feel like I'm doing it for the sake of it. And then my publisher came like 2 weeks later. She's like, somebody else is writing a book on this, so we need to change tack. And then we came with intuition, and again, it just flowed. It flew, so to speak.
It flew, it flowed, it flied. I mean, I can imagine, because I know these deep flow spaces, then we need a very good editor, and the editor can often change the tone. So I think that's the luck, to find a good publisher and editor that respects the flow, that respects that deep wisdom that's coming through, and that also and can sense the voice, right? Can sense how the voice goes, because I've had things edited and they seem like they're coming in a different tone back to us. So so we're very lucky when that happens. And
it doesn't teach you as well to stand up for your voice, because you know, when you hear that back, and maybe when you've got less experience, you kind of feel like, oh no, I need to please. I know that used to be one of my traits, is like, I have to please, like, I want to do good work for you. But that finding that moment where you're like, I hear what you're saying, but that doesn't resonate with where this is coming from.
Yeah,
it's a really empowering moment. And you know, you've just got to kind of not freak out and hold tight as you kind of let that process go, because you won't know until it's out there.
You won't know until it's out there. That's right. You won't know. And then I think, though, that when we tap into that flow state and tap into our powerful inner voice, that is what resonates, because it's very authentic. It's very true, right? And I always love that the word you know, to author and to be authentic. I mean, it sounds like it's very connected. To author our own lives, yeah. I think we really have to tap into that inner voice. Exactly.
Absolutely.
Was there a turning point for you, or was it a gradual process where you just really sensed, you know what, from this day on, I'm really saying 100% yes to me.
Sorry, that was my puppy giving you a barking back.
Yeah.
Sorry, my lovely, could you say that again?
Was it a gradual process where your intuition just deepened and deepened, or did you really sense that after a few of these setbacks that you got a clear message from, who knows, the universe that said, now I'm going to 100% stay true to my own voice? Or was it a gradual thing that kind of like, okay, some days are good, some days I'm totally confused, right?
Yeah, I think it's an unraveling, isn't it? But it's when I was younger, my family are from up north here, so it's kind of like, you know, working class. Everybody, you work and you do. And when I started having these kind of loving crystals at 7, everyone's like, you know, it's a bit kind of crackers. But there was something in me that just knew that I just loved being in that energy, loved being outside, loved being in my own company. Loved that I could hear all these things going on around me. And then as, you know, puberty happens and the body starts to change, the feeling of that sensation of connecting with spirit feels a little bit uneasy. And my kind of path into it's probably a little bit more on the dramatic side. But my grandparents had both been passed before I was born on my mum's side, but I was fascinated with them. I was just obsessed, always asking questions. And my mum was like, no, leave it, let it go. Died of broken hearts. And then I just used to sit at the top of our stairs looking out this window. And now I know I was meditating, but I was just sat and sit there for hours. And this man visited me. Like, he walked towards me. It's like, in your mind, it's like a tracing paper over my mind. And he said, I killed your granny. And my body just lit up. Like, it was just like fire moving through my body. And I ran into my mum and I was like, Granda, kill granny, Granda, kill granny. And she was like, drying her hair, drop the hair dryer. She's just looking at me like completely, what on earth? No, you're making it up. And we're really close as a family. And I just looked like I'd broken her heart, and I felt like I'd broken her heart in that minute. So I walked out that room feeling like a complete crazy person. Decided I was going to be like my sister because she seemed to have a really easy time with it. I got quite low in myself. I ate a lot. I kind of just truly tried to switch it off. The more you switch it off, the louder it got. And then a couple of years later, it came out that he'd had a nervous breakdown. She'd gone to leave him, and he grabbed her by the throat and put her to sleep. And he was reaching out through me to heal the relationship with my mum, because my mum, that happened to my mum when she was 24, and she was 40 what, when you've got your 11-year-old daughter kind of talking back to you about something that is completely private and soul-destroying. And that was the start of it. That was the start of learning how to trust myself, but also to kind of want to get it right. And that's where the kind of getting it right is the bit that gets you stuck, because when you want to get it right, you lock it all off, you lock it all in. I used to sing, like singing lessons when I was 14, because I was just really quite shy and quite uncomfortable. And that really helped me start to find my voice, because it was different. And even then, the teachers were like, oh, her voice is too mature for her age, or she shouldn't be singing that song. And then you cower in a little bit. And then I'm like, no, this is my voice. And you go off and develop that, and you listen to that, and you enjoy it. And then when the time comes, you start working with the other people in a gradual way. And I think it is about self-teaching, right? It's about knowing sometimes you're not going to get it, in inverted commas, right, but it might come in a way that is right for somebody else. So when I started doing healing work, I was like, I don't want to move like this, I'm going to feel like this, it feels wrong. And the more I'd worked intuitively, I started seeing films for people. And then when they came out of session, I was like, I didn't say anything, and then I feel really heavy for a couple of days, and I'm like, I've just got to kind of, you know, grow a pair, and next time I do this and it comes through, I'm just going to say it. So I did, and the reaction to it was kind of cool and crazy, because they're like, that's everything where I'm at, that feels like everything I need to know, and it feels like you've been reading my diary. So you start to work with that, the guidance then, to help people sense their way through. So it's been kind of big moments of like, bam, that big input, big impact, and then lots of moments of, oh goodness, is this right? But I've just got to trust it and go with it, because in my body it feels right, but in my brain it feels completely left field. So finding that balance is life, I think, isn't it?
It is. Emma, we're going to take a very, very short break, and we're going to be back with more on trusting our inner voice.
Yes.
The cutting edge of conscious radio, OM Times Radio, IOM FM.
OM Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. Connect at omtimes.com. OM Times, creating a more conscious lifestyle.
With happy clients all over the world, Kara Johnstad knows that your voice is the missing link to more authenticity, abundance, creativity, and health. An internationally acclaimed voice expert, Kara's breakthrough methods have helped thousands of people successfully heal their voice wounds and extinguish the story of self-doubt and shyness forever. Join in group trainings, attend online sessions, schedule one-on-one time, and invite Kara to work with your organization and community. Get started today. Go to www.karajohnstad.com and receive a special guided meditation designed to fine-tune your inner voice and welcome you on the voice journey.
This is Kathy Beal, host of Celestial Compass, featuring astrology you can use. Celestial Compass points you to what's going on in the sky and what you can do with it down here on Earth. We also explore fun, effective, and cosmic tools for navigating this adventure we call life. Join me the first and third Monday of the month at 5 p.m. Eastern Time for Celestial Compass. It's enlightening, entertaining, and empowering.
If I could be you,
and you could be me,
for just 1 hour.
If you could find a way
to get inside
each other's mind.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
We've all felt left out. And for some, that feeling lasts more than a moment. We can change that. Learn how at belongingbeginswithus.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
Welcome back. I'm Kara Johnstad. This is Voice Rising, and today with author, clairvoyant, and meditation teacher, Emma Lucy Knowles. Emma, you were talking before the break about how you started not only tuning into your intuition with trusting those, that strong voice, talking about the story of your grandma and grandpa and your mom, but you also talked about taking singing classes, which I always sense that is like the ultimate of voice work, is opening this huge channel. And then if we run ourselves through the highs and the lows, it seems like our whole practice becomes so embodied. And there's even a line in your book that said, intuition sings through our entire body. Of course, that caught me. Intuition sings through our entire body. What is your experience, I guess, with feeling like you, as a singer or somebody that works with, again, not only the writing voice, the inner voice, which is also meditation work, probably the speaking voice, we're now in interviews or teaching, and now also the singing voice. So these are all layers of a voice that you're resonating with, that you're tuning at the same time. Yeah. So what's your experience with bridging the singing and the, maybe even the singing and the writing with the intuition?
Definitely. I mean, when I was a kid and singing, it's like connecting to heaven, isn't it? It's like having this moment in time where you feel you're so everywhere, but also so just in yourself. And then mm-hmm. when you get to have that moment to sing for other people, or you're singing in a church or in a space, it's that feeling of connectivity because everyone's with you in that moment. And I think because I felt so isolated often with the things that I was sensing or feeling, having the singing really made me feel kind of part of human race.
Mm-hmm.
I think because it gave me common ground with people. I love being in the choir. I love being in the jazz band. I loved it. And then you kind of, I was in like a rock covers band as I kind of got a little bit older. And then there was a period coming out of that relationship we were talking about before where I lost all of that. I really lost my voice in that relationship. It's quite interesting mm-hmm. even reflecting with you now because I haven't really thought about it. But I stopped doing all those things that I loved. And so now I'm still, I sing for myself every day. I do a lot of kind of expressional stuff. So it's the one thing that helps me if I've been dealing with or working with people through some heavy stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It's very important for me to keep the chimney clear, and sound is incredible for that. And I think sound bowl, sound bath, you know, guided meditation, all that is fantastic, but there's nothing more powerful than letting your body and your voice express what might be kind of haunting you or mm-hmm. tucking away somewhere within you that you hadn't really struck upon. So for me, it grounds me as well as it connects me, and it makes me feel like I can get out of my head and get properly back into my body. And my sister, she was very much compared, I think, because I love singing, but then she felt like that's not her thing. So for a long time, even in choir, they were like, "We're not singing that right, not doing that right." Like, much like me with my writing, she then kind of really used to keep her voice quiet. So then when she's a PR and she's great with her voice, but then when she comes into that quiet space for herself, she really doubts it. And I think that's mm-hmm. because she was always told, "Oh, that's not quite right," or "That's not right." So she's much more of a performing voice, where I feel lucky enough that because, you know, people supported me when I was doing music or doing singing, I felt no fear when I was going into bigger spaces or I'm talking mm-hmm. on TV or I'm connecting with people. Absolutely no fear, where she has a fear because mm-hmm. she was always told no, like no. And I find it's absolutely phenomenal, like the power that some teachers have. They don't really realize that those tender ages of the influence or the kind of the levels that you're creating with somebody's personality and their belief in themselves just by telling them you're not a good enough, and you're like not good enough compared to whose standards. And I think that's where we really lose sight of what our voice is, because as kids we express and we explore, and mm-hmm. then we spend our adult life kind of, you know, trying to fit in or trying to do what kind of we think will help us kind of be accepted. And then you reach this wonderful corner where you turn and you go, ah, I feel happier when I'm listening to what I want rather than what I think I should.
Yeah, yeah. I think that is really a powerful journey for all of us, because we come with these big, strong, expressive voices, and all of us are moving and grooving and writing songs with our voice. You know, the 2-year-olds, the 3-year-olds, they're bopping around and their songs are tumbling out of them so naturally. And then suddenly there is a lot of judgment and a lot of where kids, their intuition is not respected, unfortunately, where they come upon an answer and somebody might say, no, of course, mm-hmm. I don't know, of course the spinach is not purple, or of course, who knows, you know? And that creates doubts. I mean, you talk about creating a sacred place for us to explore intuition. I find it fascinating that you didn't feel nervous like in big stages, because that's something that people really struggle with sometimes, feeling the ability to safely sing, to safely write. Talk to us about the importance of creating that sacred place for us to go and do that inner work, which is actually not work, it's actually a love affair. Right.
that is so much better. I much prefer that. I think because I was connecting, but I mean, I was connecting. When I'm in those bigger spaces, I have absolutely no fear. But that intimacy, those intimate moments of what do you mm-hmm. want, Emma? And spent time in that space. And I remember quite clearly when I was about 30 or just before, I woke up and I could hear a voice going, "Are you going to meditate? You're going to teach meditation." I was like, "I have no idea." So I just sat and I was like, "Okay, I'm ready." And I just knew to listen. And that helped me kind of start. But then my brain started getting in these funks, because it was like, oh, you just sort of sat at the end of the bed and, you know, just to him. And I thought, if I'm in the gym, I know I'm going to the gym, so my mind, my body's getting ready to go and work hard. So if you're creating a sacred space, just like you would in a church, you have an altar, you have a place of focus. And I now have all these little hot spots around my home where I know the minute I'm walking towards that space, there's spirit, there's earth sort of holding me within that space. So I know that I'm safe to be intimate with it myself and not worry about who's going to come in the room, because I know it's just, it's, they've got that covered for me. I can let my mind go and have these thoughts it wants to think, and I can watch them without judging. And I can know who I am without someone telling me who I am or asking me to be a version of myself. And I think these sweet spots or these spaces, we naturally create anywhere within our home, but it doesn't have to be a religious space. It can just be things that make you feel really good. It can be plants. It can be, I always say, bring in something from sort of every element. It's a good start. But I've got pictures of my family or pictures as a kid in that moment where I felt like in my mind I was really unhappy there. Pictures where I am completely laughing or letting go, and things that I've achieved, or things that, you know, where you celebrate yourself, and yeah. We should do that. We need to do that more. So it's a space where you can feel really held.
Yeah. How does working with the inner child, because you were just talking about, I had that same thing happen that I remembered certain moments and identified or framed them as a troubling childhood, and suddenly I did managed to find a picture where I was laughing joyously. So I decided to frame that one. It's like, let's reframe. I mean, I think you call it in your book, correcting the memory film.
Memory film, yeah.
So tell us a little bit about that practice. How do we correct the memory film?
So I believe that we can often kind of rewrite, everything's about perspective, isn't it? You can rewrite something in your mind. So if you can rewrite something and make it, reframe it, and a lot of business people do this, like we reframe a problem and make it something really fantastic. And you can do that with your memories within kind of, I think that's what you're doing with healing. You're healing the story.
Yeah.
So if you're doing energy work, you're healing that emotion within the body. So if we talk about correcting the memory film, I always do that in a space where the practice is you open that space and you open a kind of a bubble of light and you let that start to play out. But when you start to get to that piece of pain, you kind of watch it without it being kind of hard and heavy on you. And then you allow yourself, just like a director and editor, you get to edit how you now feel about it. We're not saying cut it out, forget about it, bury it. We're going, how do I want to feel about that, and how would I like that to feel? And I spent a bit of time some time ago working with like quantum physicists, and they used to meditate, and they'd be like, if you watch something and you actualize it, like that you don't want to happen, you can reshape that into knowing that that will never happen because you've already watched it, and then you can take your mind into manifesting where you want it to be. So I believe that actually, instead of kind of going, that never happened, that pain never happened, you can start to edit a little bit of the emotion or cut that into how you want it to be. Not about kind of deluding yourself into saying these things never happened, but actually, how can I start to make this a positive experience? How can I look at that moment where I thought I was in a lot of pain and go, actually, every time I look back at that, I will now remember that I really grew from that. Or every time someone called me that name, okay, that hurt and that kicked me, but actually that kicking has made me the most strongest person I know. Like taking that and using it to kind of superpower yourself rather than to sabotage, because that ego will always find those little memories. Even now, if I'm doing stuff and I'm like, and it's important, and you know, that's where the meditation helps, and that little voice comes in and goes, why are you doing this? You kind of, you fraud, you imposter. But the more you do the work on the kind of the bits where that imposter syndrome was born, or where it's kind of, it's validated by the ego, the less kind of power the voice of the ego has when you're in those moments, because you know you've dealt with it on different levels. If that makes sense.
You know, I mean, what I hear is to have the courage to own our story, so not to spiritually bypass, to not to repress, and then have the courage actually to understand that we're creators, and once you own the story, it's yours, so you can start to continue to rewrite it or reframe it, or that's kind of what the essence of what I hear is exactly that.
Spiritual bypassing is really scary, isn't it?
Yeah.
It really is, yeah.
Yeah, and I think there is a lot of You know, there's a lot of power in owning all the different shades, right? All the different frequencies. It's not only about the light. It's all the, you know, the lotus wouldn't be anywhere without the mud, right? And the phoenix would be nowhere without the fire. And, you know, that's how it is, right?
But it's exactly. Also about that accountability, isn't it? So it's kind of like, I know that if I've attracted something into my life, I'm not saying that everything you manifest it with, it's painful, is yours. But if it comes and it doesn't feel right, I can now take ownership of going, I know in that moment where it didn't feel good, I made a choice. And yeah, it might not have worked out the best, but I learned something in making that choice. I'm not going to chastise myself for the rest of my life for making what we could go bad or good choice. I made a choice and it led me here, but I'm still down the path where I'm meant to be. So sometimes we use those things as well, don't we, to sort of go, oh, I can't get much further. I can't do this till I fix this. And you can do all that as you go. It's a kind of an episode in self-forgiving, I think, as well.
Very, very true. We're going to take a very short break, Emma, and then we're going to be back with more of inner voice work and following our intuition. Yeah,
bringing a more conscious lifestyle to your world. Om Times Radio. IOM FM.
Ascending Hearts is no ordinary dating site, but a spiritual dating site with a purpose, to link you with your soulmate. We engineer the serendipity so you can trust that you will attune with someone that has the same matching vibration as you. Ascending Hearts, the conscious dating site for the spiritually aware. Try Ascending Hearts for free, ascendinghearts.com.
My name is Victor Furman. Some call me The Voice. I've always been fascinated with human nature, spirituality, science, and the crossroads at which they meet. Join me Wednesdays at 8 p.m. Eastern on Om Times Radio, and we'll explore these topics and so much more on Destination Unlimited.
You came across someone struggling with hunger. How would you recognize them? Would you notice an 8-year-old girl who's not excited for summer break
because she may not be having lunch again until September?
Or a war veteran who's having a hard time
landing a job and getting back on his feet.
I am the one in 8 Americans who struggle with hunger. I am hunger in America.
Hunger can be hard to recognize. Learn why at IamHungerInAmerica.org. Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to the show. I am Kara Johnstad, and this is Voice Rising. Today, I am with author, clairvoyant, and meditation teacher, Emma Lucy Knowles, and we are talking all about her new book, which is on intuition. Emma, you talked about keeping the chimney swept and clean. How do you keep your voice channel cleansed so that your intuition can stay strong? And what suggestions do you have for us? Which practices have proven successful for you?
So I feel, and this is something I sometimes often slip on because I kind of feel like I do a little bit, but it's like washing your hair, like we do a quick wash when we need to do a deeper cleanse every now and again. Mm-hmm. And I actually had a really bad back injury earlier this year for about 12 weeks. Because I hadn't been cleaning as deeply as I should over the long periods of time. So what I really, 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 really recommend is bringing in, again, every element. So crystal-wise, there's the most insane piece of crystal called pink tourmaline. And mm-hmm. what she does is she really helps us shift out not just the body, but also out the auric system. Anything that is a grief within us, anything that we kind of tuck away or hide away within our energy body that might kind of jump up when we're feeling a little bit flat or a little bit under the weather. So it's a crystal that I feel really helps you wash the system out. And you don't have to meditate with it. If you have a meditation practice, bring it in. I always say to people, take your crystals to places where you feel that you're getting that meditative dose. So even if you're a runner, take it with you. If you're a swimmer, take it to the pool. I definitely feel when I'm starting to explore a new crystal, if meditation's not the way, I'll always kind of pop it under my pillow at night because I know that my mind's going to open more freely to it. So mm-hmm. I'll always use crystals in that cleansing process. I think definitely very important is to soak your feet, or if not your whole body, in salt water. I will always now kind of plunge my feet into that salt water, because that feeling of things getting stuck in the chimney, it's normally not so much in the higher resin that I kind of recognize it in myself. It's more in the lower regions of my body that I tend to get it stuck. So the salt water is great because it really helps everything percolate back out and really allows you to ground on a deeper level. Like that salt is kind of exfoliating your energy. So the pores of energy just really allow you to suck up all that goodness from the earth. And then you can use fire. So I think, you know, holy wood, or I like sage, but sometimes it's a bit hefty for me. And I always think you want to dust around the body as if you're dusting around, you know, when you see those kind of body lines on the floor where they put the white marks around the body, you want to literally etch around the outlines of your whole body, but always make sure you do the back of your body too, because the back line of the body is where, again, things tend to get hidden or stuck. That feeling of people talking about you behind your back, or if people are sending you, you know, maybe not positive intention, maybe they are sending you a heavier energy, it tends to go in the places we can't see it. So really know that when you are coming into that sacred space, that's a space that's open for you, that is almost taking care of you while you're there. It's air conditioning, you're keeping you clear, keeping you clean. And then you're kind of keeping that special, that sacred energy in that one hot spot in your house, that you can go there at any time and you know that you're going to feel refreshed at the same time. So making sure you're opening and closing daily, and also making lots of commands. So kind of really, 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 really big thing I brought into my practice this year, which is, it is commanded that any energy that is knowingly or unknowingly residing within my body is cast out into the light on every level and every dimension. And so it is, and so it is, and so it is. And that helps me after every session. I feel the difference. I feel it. You know, we can take shortcuts, but over time, just like grease in your hair, it starts to build and then it will come back and bite you in the butt. So really, really important that we keep the chimney really, really clean.
Yeah, the power of word. This is also voice work, right? The power of word. You talk about the word combination, I am. That is one of the most powerful combinations. I know this, but I want to hear your thoughts on I am, why this is really powerful to become aware of what we're saying and how it can change.
Yeah, I think words are like, we say like words are like wands, right? You cast spells, you cast magic. So I am is like, this is you as the creator. So, you know, when you're going, I am going to the shop, and there you go, off you go. I am washing my hair. It's these powerful statements of intent. And I am, for me, on a grander level, is I am everything. I am universal. I am you and I are, we are all together, right? We are the I am together. So it's this beautiful, beautiful phrase that doesn't just allow us to take step to step to where we want to be. It is who we are in essence. And knowing that we talked earlier about co-creating, when we use that word with intention, we use it to create where we are and how we see and how we act and how we interact. I've actually got those two words tattooed on my arm because it's my daily reminder that I am, and it just keeps me really, really alert to what words in my head I'm kind of talking to myself about. So am I being good to myself? Am I being kind to myself? Or am I talking myself down? Am I doing myself a disservice? And anytime I do feel like I am doing that, instead of sinking into the low vibration or the low resonance of that, you can change your energy in an instant just by signaling out those words like, I am brave. I am allowing myself to feel better. Like it throws you far, high and wide, but it encapsulates you in everything.
I think many people also, they don't realize that they often say, I am sick, I am angry, I am, again, not to spiritually bypass, I mean, not to, you know, but at the same time, these word mantras that are constantly holding them down, right? Well, you could say, I am I'm good, or I am kind to myself. I love those words. To be kind to ourselves. The self-love practice for me is a lot about the intuition practice that you write about, is a lot about loving ourselves enough to explore You know, what is our vibration? What is our frequency? What is true? What is not true? And to take that time, to say, you know, we're worth it, right? You also talk about gratitude as the attitude.
Yes.
Do you have a gratitude practice? Are you one of the gratitude journal people, or is that the altar?
I started doing, like, when I didn't work, when I had one foot in this world. So for about 10 years, I was seeing clients in the evenings and weekends, and then I'd have the day job. And in the mm-hmm. day job on the bus, I'd be like, oh God, like, I'm going to purgatory. It's awful. Mm-hmm. So I just used to get my phone out, and on the note page, I literally just write down 10 things that I could see there and then that I was really sort of appreciative of. So whether that's somebody who's kind of cleaning the streets, the fact that, you know, I'm able to live in such a great city, it kind of put my mood in a better space, that when I went into the office to a job that I didn't particularly want, I felt good being there because the journey there had been brilliant. Other than if I kind of spent the whole bus journey going in there going, this is rubbish, this sucks, da, 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 you know, I'm setting myself up and everyone else around me for a really, you know, mm-hmm. crappy day, I suppose. So, you know, I do it when I feel like I need it now. But for a long time, every day I was like, right, this is it. Until I've done this, that's what it is. And then I let the practice go. Because I think if you start overdoing a practice, you can do it with your ego just kind of driving, because mm-hmm. you can kind mm-hmm. of just come up with those things and you're not really paying attention. So I think it's important to keep shifting your practices up. Sort of when you're reading the book or reading any book like that, I think it's important maybe not to even read it all the way through in the order in which I've written it. Flick through, pick where your body wants you to be, or your intuition wants you to be in that moment, in that day. Otherwise, if you know what you're expecting, the ego gets really kind of smart to those things and prepares to kind of off-road you.
Yeah, it becomes an obligation, right? To list your three gratitude, your three things a day, or your 10 things a day.
Oh, yeah. Completely. Yeah. But I think when you've done that over time, it just becomes natural. Mm-hmm. It becomes so habitual that you'll notice that you're naturally doing it anyway. So maybe more it's about, I used to then send myself little alerts on my phone mm-hmm. that sort of say, like, how grateful now, or are you breathing? Like, just moments where I could just check in so that I wasn't just making these practices about being on the bus or when I was at home at night. It's about blending them into your day, because the spiritual practice isn't just between these hours when we've got a bit of free time. It's about interweaving them into your life so they become part of your essence rather than something you feel I have to do.
Yeah, a direct relationship too, right? Not just 5 minutes in the morning or 10 minutes before we go to bed. So Emma, I know you're working on different projects. You obviously do you still have a private practice, or are you doing more of the...
Yeah. I love the one-to-one work. I do session work. So we do workshops as well. I love doing recording the meditation, things like that. But for me, it's really fulfilling, like working with or being chosen to work with somebody on that kind of healing journey. So I do 3 days a week on the sessions, because what I really recognize is when I started doing that, there was a good 5-year period where it was just session. Mm-hmm. And I realized that Emma wasn't really having a life beyond being of spiritual service, but mm-hmm. that was what it needed to be for the time. And then I have 2 days now where I write, or I kind of just take a day to do what I want.
Integrate, right? Integrate.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Completely. And not feel bad for it. And if people are like, oh, why are you not sort of... Presenteeism, I don't know what it's like where you are here, but definitely where I've kind of worked before, being like sitting at a desk and doing that, there's something you kind of get applauded for. And you could do nothing mm-hmm. at that desk all day, but if you sit mm-hmm. there, you're going to get really rewarded for it. And I noticed that I was bringing that when I started working for myself full time. I was like, you know, I was sat at the desk and I'm like, that's not how it works. Like, that structure was created for, you know, advertising and media, because it that works. It's a nice kind of control mechanism that helps, but I can set my own agenda, and that was liberating. So it's time to really unravel that and not feel kind of bad or guilty for not being where I should be at the time that I was supposed to, but it's been really freeing.
A lot of the greatest ideas for our business, they come on long walks. Many of the great writers, they would take long, long walks and have a little notebook and then scribble down their thoughts. And
absolutely.
So that's very good.
So inspiration.
Yeah, inspiration, which again brings us back to the breath, right? To be inspired is to be able to be connected with our breath, connected with gratitude. So you have this new book. How do you think, I guess, what are your hopes for the future? We do seem to be in evolutionary times. I know you are in, I believe you're in London, right? Correct? So you guys have also gone through shifts with Brexit and not Brexit. Europe is in a shift. We're in climate change and everything else. What do you sense from the clients that you're working with and the feedback that you're getting on your pages? You know, where are we at and why is it so important for us to do this inner work and tuning into our intuition? Where would you like to see the world in 3 months from now or 6 months from now? Let's make it.
Give me a bit more time.
I don't know if we have more time. I would love to say, I'd love to say in a decade, but I think we're crystallizing. I think for a crystal guru, I think that we're crystallizing. Diamonds are made under pressure, and I think this is our crystal moment. Yeah.
Yeah. Totally. I think what I'm really recognizing, and maybe this has been the last 10 years, is definitely people are looking to get more connected, but they're looking at how that really means. I think the age of the socials gave everyone this amazing platform to feel very exposed and be very connected very quickly. And now we're recognizing that actually there's more to that. So with this sense of like finding your people and your community and not kind of berating people that aren't your people, like knowing that just like with crystals, there's some you're going to like and some that you're not, and some you're going to click with and some that you're not. Mm-hmm. And just working on our relationships, have better relationships with everyone around us, instead of trying to force feed people our opinion or this is how it works for me, you've got to do it. It's about, you know, supporting your people in doing it their way rather than it being one way. And I think what we really, really need right now is kind of that flexibility of ourselves to allow ourselves to remain true to ourselves whilst trying to be a good supporter of those around us we love without kind of losing ourselves in that process, which I think is really easy. Like we can get swept away in all the noise, but remembering that the noise is always going to happen, but always coming back even in that moment to kind of note what that means for us. And as long as you're doing that work and you're connecting with your people, doing that, you're raising that vibration rather than fighting for things and fighting against each other. It's definitely a time where, you know, we need to come together, and I don't think we have any other choice.
We need to come together. That is so true. Do you sense that also in your, I think you have a very big following on Instagram, if that's correct,
right,
I believe so. I mean, do you sense that it's more coming down to the essence that people used to just share, but that people have so much information and things coming to them that it's like quality instead of quantity, so that you're gathering your tribe and then these people are, let's say, going deeper into the process and not as distracted with the many millions of posts that are possible on social media? Is there a sense of honing in to the essence of what's important?
Yeah, absolutely. Like, I know someone said to me, what do you think of this crystal for me? And I'm going, you're a mascara and very differently to me. So I can say to you, you're going to love very differently to how I love. So I'm never going to tell you this is exactly what you need. But what I do want to teach you is how you know what feels good and right for you. So that when you do go on social media or you do go out in a crowd of people or you're in a bar, you know that you can make those decisions for yourself in that moment. And it's more important now than ever on social media that you can get the vibe of that feels, you know, corrupt for me, but for somebody else, maybe that's got a huge following because it works for those other people, and not to feel that you have to go against what feels right for you in order to fit in, to know that it's okay. So if you use social media more as a playground of kind of getting it right or wrong without feeling you're doing that out there live in the real world. So I think it's really important that we don't get too lost on the social and that we do have this moment. And I think, you know, COVID is amazing and teaching us all about how much we need each other and we miss each other. But use those kind of technological spaces as kind of teaching grounds for yourself. Does that feel good?
Yeah.
Does that not? And I do that with my food as well. Like if I'm eating something, because I was a habitual, like emotional, so now I'm very much like, okay, which do you, and I put the food in front of me and I'll either douse with my hand over it, which feels good, or I'll think about it, which, you know, tune in on it. Use those things to your benefit. Don't let them just use you.
Perfect. Emma, thank you so much for being with me today at Voice Rising. For all of those out there, go pick up her new book and subscribe, of course, on your favorite streaming site to the Voice Rising show. There are also archives available at Om Times Radio. And I wish you much success, Emma.
Thank you so much, and to you.
All right, bye-bye.